Welcome to Voices of Experience radio show and podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the Voices of Experience podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts. No promotional fees have been paid to anyone appearing on Voices of Experience. Now, on with the show.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Voices of Experience. If you're listening to this show on KIXI AM 880, good afternoon. The same for KKNW 1150 AM, good afternoon. And if you're listening to it on the podcast, you can be listening to it anytime. So welcome to the show 24/7. My name is Paul Casey, your host. We got Eric Crema and Eric Ryder in the studio. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hey, hey.
Okay, we're here for another one, and hey, this is going to be a good show. I think we've had some really good ones lately. They're all good, but particularly I think we've had some fun in the last shows. And for example, I have a guest that I've had on several times. His name is Joe Yogerst, and he is a writer for National Geographic, which I feature a lot in this show proudly. And he wrote a book called 50 States, 1,000 Eats. And it's a colorful book, and it goes through, again, all 50 states, the best places to eat in these particular states and locations. And one of the things is that I really appreciated after talking to him, you know, we always have regional likes where you go to, of course, the Southwest, Mexican food. And you, but there's places that I had no idea how ethnic-driven it was for food. And he talks about that. And so that is going to be coming up, oh gosh, about 15, 20 minutes from now. Again, he's been on the show several times. Meandering Musings with Neil Peterson. Only Neil would talk about this. And we're talking about getting your shoes shined. Okay. He went to the Denver airport within the last couple of months. I don't think he's had his shoe shined in a long time. That's not indicative of him, of course. You just don't do it as much.
Yeah.
But there used to be an art to it and a lot more to it than you think. And he did stop and get his shoes shined in Denver. And he shares that today. We'll hear part of it. And then if you want to hear the rest of it, we can let you know how you can get to his podcast.
Spoiler, this involves a blowtorch, which I wasn't expecting hearing about a shoe shine, but stay tuned for that.
Did that was the blowtorch brought out before or after he requested a tip? Pay me now, pay me later.
Right. You'll hear.
All right.
I felt the same way about when we came to the blowtorch, and I go, this is Neil. This is Neil's would have this with his experience. And today we're going to talk about some favorite movies that people have. Just to get out there, and we've got ours, and we're going to ask some listeners to chime in on that. We have several to call in on that, what their favorite movies are of all times. I'm going to talk a little bit about Palm Springs later if we have time. I've been coming here for 10 years during this time, right in this period of years, what I mean, January, February, and March, and there's certain things I've picked up that I'll pass on to you that if you ever come down this way, that you haven't been your way down this way, that maybe you can make some judgments based on what you hear today. Voices of History, the top historical events for March 27th. Here's a hint of one of the events that occurred. A severe earthquake struck somewhere in the United States on this day, and it became known as the Good Friday Quake. Any guesses? Anybody jump out and say, I know it?
I don't.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of this one. So
okay,
yeah.
Good. Stumped you both.
Yeah.
But I think you will know of it when we get to it a little later in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Timeless classic for today. This song not only became number one in the United States, but in many countries around the world. The irony is that most of the population that adored this song, like me, couldn't understand a word of it. Any ideas?
Mm.
I think they might have understood one word of it, the title.
Right. I think you're right. That's true, Eric. But there it is. So that's another mystery for later in the show. And I want to get into a little bit about running your own business, and that would be the solopreneur segment. And today I'm going to talk about the importance of pragmatism and going into business for yourself. So anybody have anything else before we launch into the first part of the show? We're going to talk about some of the movies, and we'll start with what somebody who called in, and we'll talk about some of our favorite movies as well in just a few moments.
That sounds good. Should we hit one of these first movie recommendations that someone's called in about?
That's a great idea, Eric.
Let's do it.
Hi, this is Derek from Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and I'm going to go with The Knights of Cabiria by Federico Fellini. There's lots of really great movies, obviously, but I like that one partly because it's not so famous. I also really love Italy, and it's got a really subtle message about that's optimistic and also realistic about how long it takes for even the smallest amount of positive change to happen.
Very interesting. I'd never heard of that movie. It's what, Knights of Cribiria?
I think that's what it said.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Never heard of it, but I looked it up. It's 1957. I was going to see if I could watch it before the show. I wasn't able to, but it kind of looks very interesting. I think I will want to follow up on it and watch it.
Well, you love Italy, right? So if it's based there, I mean, it might be really worth watching.
Yeah. Had you heard of this movie, Eric?
I have.
Writer?
Yeah, no, I hadn't heard of it.
Okay. Well, let's start with one of our favorite movies. Why don't you hit it, Eric Crema? What is your favorite movie of all times?
Well, I like everyone, there's just so many, you know. You like a comedy for the comedy, you know, you like a drama for the drama. So it's hard to narrow it down to one. I kind of go back and forth on this. So I'm going to actually defer to Mr. Ryder while I form my thoughts.
All right.
Mr. Ryder, not to put you on the spotlight, but please.
Well, I have a tough time whittling it down to one movie, too, because I like a lot of them. But I think usually when I'm asked this question, I go with Michael Collins, which was a 1996 film by director Neil Jordan. I think it's kind of an underrated movie, but I love it. And if you're a history buff, it's just got extra points for that because it's the true story of Michael Collins, who was a revolutionary during the Irish Revolution back in 1916. And it's got a stellar cast, Liam Neeson, Aidan Quinn, Alan Rickman, Stephen Ray, Brendan Gleeson, Julia Roberts. I think it's a very enjoyable movie. It's got action, it's got drama, it's got history. So I'm going with that, Michael Collins.
Michael Collins, awesome.
That's a good one. I saw that movie as well, and my background being Irish heritage, I was very interested in it. And about that period of time, the, you know, Irish uprisings and things like that, and I learned a lot in that movie. It makes me want to revisit that. That's a good choice.
Thank you.
I have put a check mark next to the one I like. I wrote down several here, but I have to defer to Citizen Kane.
Oh.
I read a great article prior to seeing it, and it talked in depth about how many things it broke through mm-hmm. from a filming standpoint, angles and plot, and that just hadn't been done in cinema. And so I kind of got a chance to look for those things while watching the movie. It actually mm-hmm. made it more enjoyable. But the storyline itself, I think, is huge. I love how Orson Welles acted it out. So that's why I'm going with Citizen Kane. I've seen it probably 5 times, and I'll watch it again and love it still.
Often cited as the greatest movie of all time, so you're not alone in selecting Woo-hoo. That one. Yeah,
somebody likes it.
Well, I just watched that movie for the first time in my life in the last 2 weeks.
Okay, what'd you think?
And, I thought it was great. It was outstanding, as you point out. And yes, Eric, when I was looking at the greatest movies of all times, I did see that was number one. And I think that's what prompted me to watch it. And yes, I would have to agree. It's a much heralded movie, and for good reason. I didn't really realize how groundbreaking all of the movie techniques were during that filming of that. And all of the set changes they made. So, yes, I would be 100% with you there. I do have my favorite movie of all time. I'm going to defer to that till a little later. But before we go to the interview with Joe Yogerst, I do want to say what I found out when I said to ChatGPT, what are the 10 best movies of all time? And this is what ChatGPT had to say. First of all, The Shawshank Redemption, number one. All right, wow. Michael here just lifted his arms in the air in the studio here in Palm Springs, said number one for that one. The Godfather, number two. Godfather 2, number three. Yep. The Dark Knight, 2008, that would be number four.
Oh, that's a good one.
Okay, I don't know anything about that. Is that a Batman one?
Yeah. Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy. I just rewatched those recently, and they all still hold up. Maybe the last one's a little bit off, but those first two, Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, super good.
Okay. 12 Angry Men, 1957. I did see that. That was a great movie. Number six, Schindler's List. Can't argue with that. That was
another Liam Neeson movie.
That's right. That's very true. The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, 2003. I am not into that, but I know millions of people are. So I have to, again, defer to that. But it sounds like not a lot of people would argue with that positioning because it's been so popular. Anybody seen those movies?
I did. I saw them when they came out in the theater. But I haven't come back and watched them since, so maybe that says something. I don't know.
There you go. Number eight, Pulp Fiction, 1994.
That's a good one, too.
Yeah.
I saw that movie at the theater when it came out. I was in Burlington, Vermont. I thought it was okay. I just didn't remember it that well.
Okay.
I watched it within the last 2 months, and I loved it. I went, oh, have you ever done that to a movie?
Yes.
Watched it at some point. It was probably the mood you're in or something. It didn't connect with me then. And I said, I'm going to see this again. I went, oh, I get it. This is a great movie. So Pulp Fiction number eight. Same thing happened. Well, excuse me. Number nine, let me say it first. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, 1966.
Yep.
I never watched this movie at all. I'm not into Westerns that much. I tried to watch this movie a few times. I get into the first hour or so. I walk away from him not to return. And I've done that probably twice in the last 15 years. I finally watched it in the last couple of weeks. I've been watching movies down here in Palm Springs, I guess, more than I thought. Right. I loved it.
You loved it. All right. Great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a little long, 3+ hours. But no, I said, okay, now I understand. Whether it's in the top 10 or not, I'm not sure about that, at least for me. But it was really an outstanding movie, so I get it.
Well, in the composer, there we are. Who's the composer, Eric?
Morricone.
Morricone.
Yeah, Sergio Morricone.
Yeah. Italian spaghetti westerns. Love it.
And then number 10, Forrest Gump.
Oh, really?
Wow.
All right.
There you go. And I will talk about Forrest Gump a little later. I'm going to get into the movie. I've got movies on the brain with an interview with Joe Yogerst in just a moment. But Forrest Gump, spoiler alert, is my favorite movie of all time.
So that's all AI.
That's right. All AI. I'm finding it pretty accurate. I mean, hard to argue with. Let's put it that way.
So
I mean,
when
it's not way out there.
So when we have droids cleaning our house in the future and we're like, I want to watch this movie. No, we're watching Forrest Gump. It's going to happen.
I wonder if it tailors its top 10 choices based on what Paul likes.
Maybe.
Oh, that's I can't say if that's right or wrong.
I mean, it's a subjective category, so I wonder if it's trying to please. With its answer.
Oh, that's a scary thought, isn't it? Yeah, it's in my room, and you know they can hear me talking about Forrest. And they put it in there when I do it. Yeah, that wouldn't be too far from the truth. I mean, I guess I was listening to Peculiar Podcasts with Pat Cashman, and they were talking about he and Lisa Foster. About when they talk into something in their home or things like that. And what am I thinking of? The device. It's,
a lot of devices. You know,
Alexa or Siri.
And they'll talk about something purposely for a long time, and then it pops up on their phone.
It's crazy.
That is a little scary.
So just double checking the list, no Weekend at Bernie's. It's not there.
No, I
see. That's
what
my.
I'm sure that's 11. It just got cut off. Weekend at Bernie's. I did see that too. All right, let's get to the interview with Mr. Yogurst, and we'll be back with more discussions on this. And we got a lot of good stuff coming. All right, we got Joe Yogurst with us today, and he is an author and has written many books, as I said at the beginning. National Geographic, see, this book is 50 states, 1,000 eats, where to go, when to go, what to eat, what to drink. He's got it all. He's been a guest, as I said, several times, and he gives many diverse recommendations in the United States and in Canada, included the can't-miss restaurants seen on TV food trucks, diners. He includes that in the books, cafes, delicious regional delicacies, and more. So let's listen to my talk with our discussion with Joe Yogurst. I wanted to ask you, in all the books you've done, 50 states, 5,000 ideas, 100 drives, 5,000 ideas, 100 parks, 5,000 ideas. Has anybody out there who listened to you, bought one of your books or something like that, and tried to go to all these destinations as much as they could and get back to you and say, hey, I did take this roadmap and gave you some feedback on that?
Not yet. I have had feedback from people that say, you didn't include this in my hometown.
I'll bet.
Okay, well, I can't include everything everywhere. Otherwise, it would be 100,000 eats or 100,000 things to do. I just keep trying to say, they're ideas books. They're not in-depth guidebooks. If you want to do that, there's plenty of books just on Seattle or San Diego or Portland or Oregon or wherever it is that can go into a lot more depth than mine is. Mine is an ideas book for, well, where might I want to go on vacation next time? And what might I want to do when I'm there? Or if you already know you're going to a place, what restaurants and bars and other, you know, eating experiences exist at these places that I might want to tap into while I'm there? So that's really what this book is all about. I'm already going to Florida. I'm going to Miami. Where can I eat that I don't know about already? Or even more obscurely, I have to go to North Dakota for some reason. Do they actually have restaurants there? So that's the purpose of this book, is to tell people there's great food everywhere. There's amazing regional food cultures all over America. It's not all drive-in, you know, burgers like, you know, we seem to think. And it's not all chain restaurants. There's so many amazing independent restaurants. There's more than ever. A lot of them didn't make it through the pandemic and COVID. In fact, when we first did this, we did this list of, it went on for like 40 pages of things we wanted to include in the book. And then when I sat down to write it, I discovered that roughly 5-10% of them didn't make it through COVID. So we had to go and find more. So yeah, that was one of the great discoveries, was regional cuisines are still very much alive and thriving all over the nation and in Canada too.
I see that you include food trucks.
Well, yeah. I may not have if I'd done this 10 or 20 years ago, but food trucks are amazing. Not all of them, of course, but they, first of all, give you food in places where you may not have it normally because there are no restaurants, like craft breweries, for instance, and how they match up with food trucks. And my local craft brewery here in San Diego had for a long time had a Mexican food truck that was really good. And they found a brick-and-mortar empty shop front right next to the microbrewery, and they moved indoors. So they went from being a food truck to being a proper restaurant.
How about some regional delicacies? You break it down in the book, and that's fascinating, about all the food that comes from different parts of the country. I think we know this inherently, but still it's amazing how regionally the country has so many different food sources.
Well, one great example of regional food for me is the Upper Peninsula, Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And, you know, people call themselves Upers, you know, like UP, Upers. And Uper cuisine is basically based on the three different immigrant groups that went there for different reasons. Cornish miners from England, Italian miners from Italy, and Finnish immigrants from Scandinavia who weren't miners, but they seemed to like the lakes. So Upper cuisine is something totally different. It's based on the immigrants who went there in the 1800s. And it's still very much a part of local cuisine, but I don't think a lot of people know about it outside of their region. German cuisine in North Dakota, which isn't, you know, it's kind of famous for because of Fargo for having these Scandinavian overtones, but there were a lot of German immigrants, and there's a whole diner chain, Kroll's Diners, that serve German specialties, you know, sauerkraut and bratwurst and things like that. One thing I discovered, you know, writing this book was growing up in San Diego, my mother was from Phoenix, I grew up here, and I grew up with Mexican food, kind of California-style Mexican food, but doing this book, I realized that Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and California have very different types of Mexican food. Tex-Mex to old-style New Mexican to Sonoran and Tucson to fish tacos in San Diego. And so we have our regional Mexican or at least Mexican-influenced cuisines, and each state is, I think, very distinctly different of the four border states. You know, Hawaiian food is totally different again. It's very Asian with mixed with South Pacific and some American standards. Spam is a big deal in Hawaii, and it's used in a lot of different dishes. They have some very unusual foods in Utah, most of which you cannot find in restaurants, unfortunately. They come from Mormon pioneer days, and they're still very popular. And some of them I got through my mother because they filtered down to Arizona, like green jello salad with pineapple in it. Funeral potatoes, which is kind of a potato casserole that's a Mormon dish. So Utah has very distinctive regional food, too.
I was kind of the stereotype that, yes, food chains are taking over everywhere, and we're not having unique food stops anymore. But you're suggesting to me and my audience that that is not true.
Yeah, and I think it continues to get more diverse. You know, if you go to small town, you know, the internet and Wi-Fi is responsible for a lot of it. And the reason for that is, I think, this is just my own opinion, is that the internet, you know, small town America for years had a brain drain and a youth drain because there weren't a lot of opportunities in small towns, and they didn't want to live in small towns because they felt like they were removed from culture. You know, television had three stations and that was it. And, you know, mom and dad watched it, but I can't wait to get out of here. But the internet and everything it's brought to everyone has made a lot of people either move to small towns because they think it is a better lifestyle in a lot of ways. And when they move to these small towns, they open up businesses. They open up adventure travel businesses or, you know, gear shops and restaurants and bars. So you can go to, you know, like Whitefish, Montana. It started as a railroad town. It was really depressed until the 1990s, and all of a sudden it became this cool little place to go. And it's full of young people, and it's restaurants and bars and distilleries and shops. And it just found new life because people stopped leaving there, and they started moving back to places like that.
Yeah, great migration to these smaller towns are coming through people and foodies, I guess. As you said before,
yeah, exactly.
It may be something else, but that has really changed that landscape, and it makes me feel much better about the country and the world in that sense that you're mentioning. I mean, there's room for optimism here, not just in the food, but the way the migration's taking place.
A lot of small-town America has been revitalized because of the internet and the opportunities that, you know, for people to do different things and let the world know about it and come enjoy their food or enjoy their activity or whatever it is. I can think of so many towns that I've visited for this book and the previous ones that were like that, like Bend, Oregon is that way. It's been really revitalized by the food scene there is incredible because of people moving to Bend and wanting better food than they had there before. And it's not to say the food was bad, but there wasn't a lot of variety in Bend. I went to journalism school at the University of Oregon. I remember what Bend was like a long time ago. And other than your burger joints and steak places, there wasn't a lot to eat in Bend. Now you get this amazing variety of food in Bend, Oregon.
Well, the Bend Chamber of Commerce is going to like you. Well, that was Joe Yogerst and talking about finally Bend, Oregon. It's funny. We were just mentioning Bend about it. We were talking about Bend, Oregon just 30 seconds ago.
It's off the air.
And a whole other subject. But anyhow, that book is 50 States, 1,000 Eats. If you're interested in finding out more about the book, just Google 50 States, 1,000 Eats, and you can get it. It's that simple. So we were talking about Bend, Oregon, just for a moment, because we're back into the movies, and we were just mentioning that the last Blockbuster store closed, but the only just one left. I mean, all they all closed, but there's one left in Bend, Oregon.
Yeah.
So
it's just amazing what people today who didn't experience, you know, having to go to the rental store, and it was kind of fun. You pick out, but sometimes the movie wasn't there that you wanted to see, and you bring it home and you'd watch it. But all that's done, and it's all at your fingertips with Netflix, Hulu, and so on.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. You could just pretty much dial up any movie you want to watch.
Well, the good thing is now when you realize, oh, I've just spent an hour browsing trying to find what movie I want to watch, you're not in another location. You're in your house. Like back then, you'd go and get lost for an hour looking at all the titles at the Blockbuster or other video store that there was.
Yep. Yeah, I totally forgot about that. You're right. You remember that, right, Paul? Going to the store, finding that special movie?
I sent people out to do that for me.
Oh, you did? You are so...
No, I did. So that was one wealthy. In West Seattle where I'd go, yes, absolutely.
Well, wasn't there Scarecrow? Was it Scarecrow Video out there in West Seattle?
Oh, yeah, that was a great one.
Yes, I do remember that as well. So let's get another individual who weighed in on their favorite movie. How about that, Eric?
Sounds good.
My favorite movie of all time is Top Gun. With Tom Cruise, it's a classic. I could watch it over and over again.
Nice.
There you go.
It's one of those kick butt movies. I mean, you can't come out of there not feeling a little pumped up.
Yeah, another one that I still need to see.
Top Gun 2. There was another one that came out. Did you? Anybody see? I did see it. It was okay.
The remake, the new one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty good.
I saw it.
I saw it at a thing called a drive-in out in Bremerton.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty cool. You should do that. It's fun.
You're up with the times.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the movie Top Gun, but I certainly wouldn't put it way up there. But I thought the remake was okay. You see what I mean? It was like there's a big drop in that. I didn't think that happened there. They were both about the same. Way I looked at him, both enjoyable, very enjoyable. Tom Cruise was great, and just take it from there.
Well, here's the thing also about that movie. So there's movies that you identify from your high school days, and that's the first one certainly would be right in the wheelhouse of my high school. And I believe the Navy loved it because they ended up getting just tons of enlistment from that.
Hmm.
But that's one of those that you remember from your youth, you know? So in that sense, it's even more special. I mean, do you have a movie like that, Paul, that, you know, you were young, you watched it, and you're like, this is awesome.
Yeah, and then you think about it years later. Yeah, I'm trying to think of some of those types of movies that came out. What was that? Didn't really, it reminds me of like Green Beret or something like that.
What about The Graduate? Was that sort of an...
Yes, that was definitely one of those movies. Must see. I think I was in high school when that came out, and I saw that several times, and it was a really good movie. And what I find really interesting about that movie is that there's a scene, and I think it's famous. I don't know how famous when you go for generations, but what makes it interesting is one of the characters was telling Dustin Hoffman to the future's in plastics. Remember that?
Yeah.
And people chuckled at that because it was a different time. It was the late 60s, and it was anti-corporations and government. And this guy's telling Dustin Hoffman, who's confused as heck about everything, this is where it's at. And he was just like, and it was very funny. Well, people who watched that scene later going, yeah, maybe you should go into plastics. You know what I mean? It was just a different time frame. So that was a very good stab right there, like one of that type of movie, The Graduate especially. So I'm just going to speaking of a time frame in terms of movies, I'll move this through this swiftly, but Forrest Gump, that's my favorite movie of all time because of the period piece that it is growing up during much of the time that movie featured. For example, the early 1960s, I was very young, but you know, it kind of highlighted some of the highlights, lowlights and things, the JFK assassination, RFK, the Vietnam War, of course, was featured in that, in the aftermath. And of course, his love of Jenny, played by Robin Wright, that was very special relationship there. Lieutenant Dan, played by Gary Sinise.
Sinise.
Did I get that wrong? Okay, I got that wrong. All right. And he did a wonderful job. I mean, that was his real claim to fame. Bubba, the shrimp boat guy, you know, and then he goes on to Dick Cavett, and he meets John Lennon and plants the idea for the movie Imagination or Imagine. he's there landing on the moon. He's in ping pong diplomacy. He's where everything happens. He has these breaks, but he's always in this historical event. He's staying at the Watergate Hotel. He's the guy who calls in and says, there's somebody breaking into some office there. He's positioned in every event that happened during that time. And I thought it was very well done. Let's put it that way. One of the best. But I think what really jumped out at me in that movie was here was a guy who was mentally diminished, low IQ. And what he saw it through his eyes throughout this movie was the hypocrisy of the time. He saw the hopefulness. He's always optimistic. He had great loyalty to everybody. He was the highest integrity of anybody around him. And I think he saw things more clearly from his point of view. And again, someone who didn't have all the brain power, but was able to see clarity more than anybody during that time. That's why that movie really resonated with me.
I like that analysis, Paul. That's interesting.
So I don't know if anybody else has a comment on Forrest, but that's why it as I said, it touched me during that time. So
I didn't realize it was held in such high regard. I guess I'm just more knowledgeable about the parodies of it, having never seen it. But
oh,
now
you've
I
never
feel
seen
like
it.
No. Now I feel like I definitely have to check it out.
Check it out.
Yeah, I would be, because I know you're a movie buff, Eric Ryder, and I would like to get your take on it after you'd see it. I think it's really one of the finest. Obviously, Tom Hanks is the best, and I said when we were off mic that my second favorite movie of all time with him is Saving Private Ryan. Mm. Absolutely love that movie, too. So, anyhow. All right, so let's see. Where do we go from here?
We're talking history with these movies. We might as well jump into Voices of History.
Yeah.
Why not? Let's do it.
Welcome to today's Voices of History.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Safely on the ground, he had barely cut the engine when the crowd reached the plane. They shouted, Lindbergh, Lindbergh.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office.
Well, March 27th is a big day in U.S. history. The U.S. Congress passed the Naval Act of 1794, which authorized the construction of 6 frigate ships, and that really effectively established the U.S. Navy. In 1866, President Andrew Johnson vetoed the Civil Rights Act of 1866, which would grant citizenship and equal rights to all individuals born in the United States, regardless of race or color. However, Congress overrode this veto, and it became law. In 1884, the first long-distance telephone call in the United States was made by Alexander Graham Bell, who called his assistant Thomas Watson in Boston from New York City. And that wasn't to be mistaken for that first call he made. I went back and looked into some more history on the phone because I thought the Watson call was made at another time, but it was, and it was made on March 10th, 1876. So that would have been, 14 years before, or excuse me, 8 years before that. And he was famously said, I want to see you.
Right.
And that was in, I believe, their location in New Jersey where they were inventing all these things. And I just wonder, I don't know if this, when he said that, you know, I want to see you on the phone, that all of a sudden he went and started doing something else on his desk, and all of a sudden Mr. Watson was at his door going, what'd you want to see me about? And he goes, oh my gosh, I've just invented something.
Right.
This is great.
Well, the sequel made history as well as the original call.
Right. Yeah. You think of this is why I love this stuff so much. You just think about what we take for granted. We were talking about, again, the iPhones and everything off air. And you look at this at that moment, just imagine what that must have been like when that occurred.
Oh, amazing.
Watson, I've got a video on YouTube I want to show you.
Yeah,
a dog and a duck are friends.
Yes, I believe that was his great nephew, wasn't it?
Right.
74, yes, that's right.
It was followed up closely by the on-hold music invention.
Yes.
That's right. Hey, guys, this is the world that we live in. Fact is stranger than fiction, and it really is. We're making up this stuff now. And it's not even as amazing as really what happened. But I just think it's fascinating to look at some of that. And also, what occurred in 1964, and you guys didn't get this. And that's the first time that's happened. That one of you didn't get this particular moment that occurred. The strongest earthquake in U.S. history struck Alaska, known as the Good Friday earthquake. It had a magnitude of 9.2 and caused extensive damage and loss of life. Now, that was the Alaskan earthquake. Now, it said 9.2. It was on Good Friday. I remember it vaguely. I was watching TV. I was a kid and hadn't gone to bed, and it came on. We interrupt this program, and those were the days when that came on, something really bad had happened. We don't get that anymore.
Right.
You know, breaking news now is like, you know, the president's going shopping or something. But that point in the 60s, when they said, we interrupt this program, you stop what you were doing.
Right.
And I remember that happening there. And what I looked up today, just something about that, because I've been a little bit interested in this probably more because I recall it, is that I've lived through two earthquakes, Seattle earthquakes. One was April 29th, 1965. And the one I think we all were involved with, the February 28th, 2001 earthquake. Okay,
yes, remember that one? Wow, yeah.
Okay. Now, the little bit of information here that I recall, there's two bits of this. First of all, the Seattle earthquake was 49 seconds. I said that, I think. The one in 2001 was 35 seconds long, okay? And it seemed to me when it happened, it was an hour. You know what I mean? It's
right.
Just terrifying when you're shaking. But the Alaskan earthquake, this is what's really, I think, phenomenal, lasted 4.5 minutes.
Wow.
Can you imagine that?
It must have felt like the end of the world.
Yeah. I mean, ours, I remember both of them seemed like that went on for a long time, and then that was how long it actually lasted. But I made that point. But look at that, 4.5 minutes. That thing shook. The other fact is, and I didn't get a chance to look up the stats, and if I'm wrong on this, I'll go back next week and let you know, is that more people died in Washington, Oregon, and California than died in Alaska through tidal waves. I think California got the worst of it. Oregon the second. Washington had a few deaths, I think, on the coast, but tidal waves that resulted from the Alaskan earthquake, again, more people died from that occurrence than the actual earthquake in Alaska. A lot of people injured, but again, Alaska's doesn't have a lot of people, and I think that's the thing that saved it. It was like, you know, New York or something, there would have been a catastrophe.
But this earthquake, the epicenter was near Anchorage.
Yes, it was.
Which was, of course, the largest city in Alaska. But even then, the population is maybe, close to what Tacoma has. So it's not a massive city.
That's right. That's right. And probably there weren't a lot of tall buildings either.
Probably not. Especially not after the earthquake.
There were some pictures of it when it occurred. And there were streets that dropped in 30 feet. And you saw some staggering pictures at the time. But I will verify that. I want to make sure on that because that's something I read a long time ago. And I want to make sure I'm right on that in terms of the number of deaths that occurred in Alaska and on the West Coast. So we'll take it from there. So there you have it. That's what happened today in history.
You have been listening to Voices of History. If you have historical events that you would like to share, call the Voices of Experience hotline at 425-653-1166. That's 425-653-1166.
So, okay, we are moving on with the show, and I think we're doing pretty good on time, but let's move it along here. Let's get to Neil's meandering musings, and today he's talking about a shoeshine, and we all want to know about the blowtorch, but you're not going to find that out totally today, but let's just get with it.
A shoeshine. When was the last time you had a shoeshine at a shoeshine stand? I'm talking about an honest-to-goodness real shoeshine, the kind you get in a hotel or an airport or at a fancy department store. For me, it's been years since I got one, but that all changed a week ago when I was in the Denver airport. On my way to the plane's gate, I passed a shoeshine stand which was stationed right in the middle of the concourse. With plenty of time before my plane was scheduled to start boarding passengers, I decided that I would, after years of not doing so, get my shoe shine professionally. Three things drew me to this. One, my dark black work dress shoes needed to be shined, and badly. I'm embarrassed to admit that I had not shined them for years. Two, there were two chairs in the shoe shine stand, and one was empty. And three, the shoe shiner was a woman, a cute, petite, African-American woman of, I would guess, 25 to 30 years of age. So I took my seat, positioned my shoes on the heel stands, and let Charlene go to work on my two shoes. I was surprised by several things. One, the first thing she did was untie my shoelaces. But she did more than that. She took my laces off entirely. Holy cow, I said to myself, this is serious. Second, she approached the job with enthusiasm, yet with a very serious demeanor. I could tell that she took the job seriously. Next, she wrapped my ankles with some sort of stiff paper, I'm presuming to prevent any polish getting on my socks. But that was not all. After many minutes of hard work on her part, Charlene looks up at me with her big, beautiful eyes and asks me if I mind if she uses a torch. A torch? I say to myself, what in the world would you need a torch for? I ask. She shows me the torch. She turns it on. Blue fire streams from it. It's a real torch. She says that she uses the torch to heat up the leather in my shoes so that the pores in the leather will open and therefore absorb the polish more easily. The idea of using a torch to polish my shoes throws me a little bit, but in the end, I nod my head, assenting to her request.
Okay, I'm going to do something that people hate. I hate this, because I go, why don't you just tell us? And now I'm cutting it off like everything I hate and say, you're going to have to go to his podcast to figure out what happened to Neil in this blowtorch. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Because it's got a really good podcast, and I want to tee people up to see, listen to this podcast frequently. And Eric Ryder, how do they do that?
Well, you can go to meanderingmusings.net, check out Neil's website, where you'll see all the episodes as well as the writings that he's done. And, of course, you can subscribe for the podcast anywhere that you find your podcast. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We recently recorded the sequel to this episode, and it's rare that he has a sequel or a follow-up episode, but there was more to this shoeshine story. So check out the full shoeshine episode and then get ready for the sequel, which is going to be dropping soon.
Oh, good God. It's like a movie like we've been
That's
doing
right.
here.
So here it's an epic.
Going to have a sequel on shoeshine. Again, Neil's the only person on the planet, and I can say this, that can do that and make it sound interesting. At least I think they're interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing how we'll grab little nuggets like that. Now he's making a sequel. Only Neil. All right. So let's move along here. And no breaks, I guess. We'll just get into today's advice for going into business for yourself. Eric, do you have anything you want to tee up here?
Yeah. First of all, I want to always welcome people to go to voicesofexperience.com. That's voicesofexperience.com. Take the small business quiz if you're thinking about going into business for yourself. Pass that information along to anybody who might be wanting to do that. And, of course, thank you to all our podcast listeners and fans to this program right here, Voices of Experience, which airs Wednesdays 3 to 4, both on KKNW and KIXI 880, and then is sent to podcasts. So if you would like to subscribe, please go to where you would normally get your podcast. You can also go to KIXI.com and just find it there as well, or KKNW 1150 and find it and subscribe there. But, Paul, I want to know about pragmatism, because today's solopreneur subject matter is pragmatism. And I'm going to screw that word up, but there we go. I'm just going to toss it over to you.
Well, I've screwed a few myself up today, so we can all do that. Pragmatism, yes. I really came to the conclusion that this is so important to have, I call it judgment, and be a pragmatist. And that what that means, let's just see what the American Heritage Dictionary says about it. And, you know, it's defined as concerned with the facts or actual occurrence. Isn't that amazing? Mm-hmm. Be concerned with the facts or actual occurrences, things that happen. That should be your guide. It shouldn't be emotion. You look at things in a very pragmatic, detached way. I'm going to do a little step here and come back to this because it doesn't directly relate to business. Now, I like a phrase that was attributed to Dr. Martin Luther King. He had a dream, but he was not a dreamer. Big distinction. He dreamed that one day there would be an African-American president, but he also knew that to reach that goal, it would require smaller steps. He was very pragmatic. In 1956, the Montgomery Transit System required African Americans to ride in the back of the bus. One day, Rosa Parks, and I'm pretty sure we all heard of her, just to review, an African American woman, refused to give her seat up to a white man. She was arrested. Dr. Martin Luther King pounced. He led a boycott of the Montgomery Transit System that lasted for a year. The law was repealed. This was a very pragmatic first step for the civil rights movement, but it also was a very pragmatic decision on the part of the transit system. They didn't change the law because they thought it was immoral, which it was. They changed the law because it saved the transit agency from bankruptcy. 70% of the bus riders were African American. Now, what does this have anything to do with running a business? I say everything. You may want to occupy a signature downtown office space, but it's not practical. Your aunt may tell you that you are a talented guitar player, but supporting yourself playing guitar is a profession that isn't very practical. Facts don't support it. The bottom line, Inc. magazine said it very well when they said this succinctly. The smartest entrepreneurs are satisfying needs, not wants. If you want to increase your prospects for success, that's the path you should take. Find a niche, solve a problem. That's what my belief is. And that is one of the questions on the quiz that you mentioned, Eric, earlier. How pragmatic are you?
Great way to explain it, Paul. I loved the way you wove in the stories of Dr. Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, and then brought it around to business, because you're so right. You can have a dream, but maybe not be a dreamer if you want that successful business.
Yeah, that always struck me as a very powerful phrase that 100%. I had heard for many years. So, well, look, we're kind of wrapping up today. We're coming down to the final moments of the show. As usual, it flew by again.
I think we got time for one more movie recommendation, though, if you like.
Well, Eric, you're in the controls, Eric. You're running the show here, so we have one more time. Or have time for that, let's do it.
Yeah, someone took the time out to call in, so let's hear them.
Hi, this is Sigrid from Seattle, and what's my favorite movie and why? Well, I don't have a lot of favorite movies, but I do love a specific genre. I do love all movies that have to do with Star Trek or those kinds of movies, outer space and things like that, and I do so love movies about submarines. Not sure why. I can watch Hunt for Red October over and over and over again. So there you have it. Thanks. Bye.
Love it.
Wow.
I do. I was going to say, I love it. Man, that's great. I'm not a Trekkie. I'm not, as I said, into space movies, but anything to do with that, but that's great. And then submarines. Wow. That's fascinating.
That's really great. That was a great comment. I like that.
Yeah, those are good. Well, we're going to have another subject coming up. We're going to want the audience to participate in, but again, we are coming to an end for this radio show, and I guess that's about it. So thank you both very much again. Michael, thank you for helping us out here. I wish we would have had him come in the movie segment. We'll do something else and have him join us next time. But any comments you heard about the show today, the Voices of Experience hotline is 425-653-1166. And if you have any more movies you want to talk about, we'll get it on the air. It doesn't have to just be today. That's 425-653-1166. Just a reminder, Voices of Experience airs on Kixi on Wednesdays at 3 p.m. and it is simulcast with Hubbard sister station, KKNW AM 1150. Voices of Experience is rebroadcast on Kixi only on Sundays at 11 a.m. Next week, Neil Peterson, back on the roster, Meandering Musings. He's going to talk about Slab City, and that's down here in this area. Fascinating. I'm going to play the whole thing. And when I say down here, I mean Palm Springs, just south of Palm Springs here. So I'm going to hold off my comments on Palm Springs. I'll hold those back till next week. And I'm also going to talk about water supplies. Not me, but the interview was something about our diminishing water supplies. Let's see, what else? Quote of the week for today. When I was growing up, I always wanted to be someone. Now I realize I should have been more specific. Lily Tomlin. So everybody have a great rest of the week. Timeless Classic is coming up next. Not on the podcast, though. But enjoy it on Kixi and some of it on KKNW AM 1115. Again, have a great week, everybody. In this week's Timeless Classic, the lyrics tell the story of a man who whistles while he's walking as he left a protest of a U.S.-Japan security treaty in 1960. The lyrics written by Rokuso K.A. were purposely generic, so they could also be interpreted as a first love. The song also has been described as a metaphor for the emergence of post-World War II Japan. It topped the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 in 1963 for 3 consecutive weeks. It became one of the world's best-selling singles of all time, over 13 million copies sold. The singer of the song tragically died on August 12, 1985, in the crash of Japan Airlines Flight 123, along with 515 others, making him a casualty of the deadliest single aircraft accident in aviation history. From the summer of 1963, Kayu Sakimoto and Sukiyaki, which means I look up as I walk.
Thank you.